program are those of the host and guests and are not necessarily those of the Information Radio Network, its affiliates, stations, or advertisers.
Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, that illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They're my views, and, well, for the next hour, they're going to be the views of John Quirk, who spent many years working with our intelligence agencies and now has a firm where he goes all over the world trying to track down assets of one sort or another. And it gives him a good opportunity to go into many of the nations where he knows people. He has an awful lot of connections in high places. And I think his views, certainly on what's going on in the Near East and in the Middle East and in South America, are vitally important to our understanding of what's going on today. So without further ado, John Quirk, thanks very much for being with us again.
Always good to be with you, Stan, especially in these important times that we live in.
Well, why don't you pick up the story and just tell us what you think about what's going on over there, certainly what's going on as far as Israel and Hamas, and the fact that we seem to be intent upon financing Hamas, and that we're really not stopping the missiles being coming into Egypt, into Hamas. It seems to me that we could do that very, very quickly. All we would have to do is say, we're going to cut off all your funds there. If you don't stop those missiles from going through Egypt, there's so many things that are going on that just don't make sense from a logical point of view. So let's get your interpretation of it.
Well, I think the dynamics of many areas are changing. The relationship between America and Israel is changing. I don't think it's going to be for the good. The relationships between the Mideast and seeing Iran rise as a regional power, especially if they have nuclear weapons, there are some changes going on. You're going to start to see more Arab countries line up behind the United States and Israel against Iran. They're very worried about Iran. We have a lot of recent reports lately that Hezbollah, with Iranian backing, is pushing to overthrow the Egyptian government. Egypt has become very hostile to Iran. And then the whole dynamics of Mr. Obama's foreign policy is really turning things upside down. Under Bush, you had the neocons and the extreme right being hardline against Cuba, North Korea, Venezuela, Russia, and to a certain extent, getting along better with China. Mr. Obama and Mrs. Clinton's policies of their so-called soft power is to give in to Cuba, ignore North Korea, which is a threat. They've just thrown out nuclear inspectors. And today at the Organization of American Summit with in Trinidad, Mr. Obama and Mr. Chavez seem very polite and friendly to each other. So I think you have dynamics changing. Mr. Obama has reached out to Cuba. Probably he'll reach out to Venezuela with the philosophy of soft power. In the Mideast, he's already reached out to Iran and made the Israelis very, very nervous, as well as our allies, Egypt, Jordan, and Saudi Arabia, that did not want to see a strong nuclear Iran. So I think also the dynamics of what Mr. Obama is doing also plays upon his plan to downsize the United States military and the weapons systems programs that the Pentagon is going to start submitting over the next 2 months. So it's kind of a scary world. I guess because I'm a product of the Cold War, an old Cold War warrior, if you believe that. I don't trust the Cubans. I don't trust the Russians. I certainly don't trust the Iranians.
All right, you hold that thought. We'll be right back in just a moment here at Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan, our guest John Quirk. And John, go right ahead. You were just saying you don't trust the Cubans, and you certainly don't trust the Iranians, but what's our alternative with Iran, Sydney? How would we stop them from developing a nuclear weapon if they wanted to? They're potentially a very, very powerful nation. Certainly they have a stable society there, and they're certainly not Arabs. They're Persians, a completely different race. Admittedly, they have a number of different subgroups within their society, the Kurds and the various other units, but predominantly the Persian influence there. Is there any way we can effectively stop them from developing a nuclear weapon if they want to? After all, the people to the east of them, China, have communist nuclear weapons. The Russians have nuclear weapons. The Pakistanis have nuclear weapons. The Indians have nuclear weapons. And the Israelis have nuclear weapons. I mean, why can we say, well, you can't have nuclear weapons, but we can have them? You can't even develop nuclear wherewithal to power a nuclear power plant because we say you can't. Should we be surprised that they're really antagonistic for us, that they do not think that we have the right to tell them, a sovereign nation, what to do?
Well, the big difference is, yes, I think we should have an influence on telling them what to do, but it seems to be waning under Mr. Obama. If Iran succeeds in acquiring a nuclear weapon and a delivery system, which they already have, it would be the very first time that a radical Islamic fundamentalist regime, which has made a dedication to Israel's destruction and threatened us, has ever acquired in history such massive terroristic power. And I'd hate to think that when the war started in Lebanon in 2006 and again in Hamas last year in 2008, if the Iranians had nuclear weapons, they might give it to a terrorist group or to Hezbollah or Hamas. And I think that the fact that the Russians, Chinese, South Africans, Argentinians all have nuclear weapons as well as us is really different with the Iranians because of the fundamentalist Shia belief that they have in their interpretation of the Quran. And it's other Arab states are worried. The Saudis are very worried. It's not just Israel. So I think that if you believe that Iran is a terrorist state, they should not have nuclear weapons. Now, if Mr. Obama is successful...
Hold that thought. We'll be back in just a moment here. All right, well, Mr. John Quirk is back with us. He thinks that, of course, we must try to stop Iran from getting nuclear weapons, and, of course, he's concerned that Mr. Obama seems to be trying to work up some sort of an accord with Iran. So pick the story up there.
Well, if Mr. Obama is successful, and I hope he is successful, he's already given the Iranians a heads up on what he wants to do. He's already given up certain things. He's told the Iranians that we'll unfreeze their assets, we'll drop the economic sanctions, we'll give them they really desire American oil technology. But what does the United States and Israel get out of it? The United States has to have a commitment that they're not going to develop nuclear weapons. And they should also, the United States should also have a commitment that Iran will not even develop nuclear energy. That's not going to work, okay? I think in the end, I don't have a crystal ball, but probably we will give in on everything and we'll still let the Iranians have nuclear power. I don't think that will be acceptable to Israel. Although Israel has come out time and time again and said they will now not attack Iran if the United States does not support us. So the Israelis are trying to cajole, pressure, schmooze Mr. Obama in getting support for either an Iranian don't, the United States must support Israel in an attack against Iran, and Mr. Obama does not want to do that. Here's the negative effects of letting the Iranians have nuclear energy. At any time, once they have peaceful nuclear energy, they can easily develop warheads. Okay, it'll be completely unacceptable to Israel, although a lot of people in Israel now, in a recent poll, said that they're starting to think that maybe they have to accept a nuclear Iran. But the negative effects in the region will be Iran will become the regional power. They may want to dominate Mideast politics, the economy, Mideast diplomacy. And at the same time, we will lose a lot of face with both Saudi Arabia, Egypt, and Iranians could continue to use subversion and try to have fundamentalist religious regimes in the Mideast, which is a synonym for terrorism. So I think it's a very negative thing to give in so early to the Iranians without the Iranians coming to some kind of agreement that they're not going to threaten Israel anymore, and that we can somehow, if we have to give in, which I think we're going to, Mr. Obama wants to, how can we possibly verify that they're not secretly going to use weapons-grade uranium in warheads and a deployment system? That's the crisis, I think, that we're facing.
Oh, there we are. John, are you there?
Yeah, I'm not sure where we cut off.
All right, fine. I think it was my end. Go right ahead. Anyway, we were simply talking about the confusion of nuclear energy with nuclear warheads. Certainly, would there be any objection to somebody supplying the nuclear the fuel rod so they could have nuclear energy? Nuclear energy is a very efficient means of generating nuclear power.
Well, I think if we had some verification and inspections like we did at one time in North Korea and other places that they weren't going to develop warheads with their already existing deployment system, we might have to accept that. Even Israel might accept it, although I doubt if Israel accepts it. And then you get into all the details, of a sovereign nation. What right then does the United States or the International Energy Commission, which has, in my view, been very favorable towards Iran, how do we verify that they're not going to secretly develop nuclear weapons? I mean, are you going to have thousands of inspectors on the ground? The devil is in the detail here. How do you verify that they're not going to eventually have the capability of someday developing a nuclear weapon?
So you think that we should just tell them they cannot develop it at all. But then an awful lot of countries throughout the world are very resentful because America keeps telling them what to do. And unfortunately, America today is a bankrupt nation. We're having to borrow almost $3 billion a day from other countries to pay our debts. And certainly we're going to run a deficit of about $2 trillion this coming year. Can we continue to run the whole world when we can't even finance our own country?
Well, I think this is the other danger that I mentioned that we're getting into, that when the Pentagon in the next few months is going to start submitting weapons programs, I think like 35 to 45 for $1 trillion programs for intelligence, for the National Reconnaissance Office, the National Security Agency, the CIA, as well as massive weapon systems to build more F-22 planes or destroyers or whatever. I think this is something that Obama is trying to cut back. I think it makes sense that we are we're doing more due diligence on the Pentagon. There's tremendous waste there. But at the same time, our adversaries, even though their economies are also bad, Venezuela is continuing to expand their military. Russia is building a whole new submarine and missile fleet. China wants a blue water navy. So just in normal national security competition, we have to have a strong military. And I think that if we start chipping away, I think we should give in on some areas and we should use diplomacy. But if we start chipping away by giving in to Cuba, they're not so much a threat, but giving in to Iran, giving in to Russia, trying to say diplomacy solves all problems, especially when we live in a world of terrorism, and then on top of that, cutting back all the Pentagon programs, I think our national security is at risk. And another feature of our national security, which nobody ever talks about, is the Mexican border. I mean, that has nothing to do with the Pentagon, but we've got to start spending a lot of money securing our border, else the drug cartels are going to take over our country.
But, of course, you know, if the Obama administration and the Bush administration before them and the Clinton administration before them had no intention of securing our borders. I mean, Congress should keep voting for money for a fence, and that always figures some way of just not building a fence. I mean, certainly they've done everything they could to demoralize the people working on the border by their pretty faulty imprisonment, unjust imprisonment of Campos and Ramian. In fact, there seems to be almost an organized, intentional effort, certainly on the part of the last several administrations, to keep our borders porous so that foreign illegal people could come into this country and take American jobs and trade so much of our funding right here in California. It costs us almost $10 billion a year, you know, simply to take care of the all the benefits we're providing for the illegal immigrants who then are taking the money they earn here and shipping it to their families back in Mexico or South America. So we can talk all we want to about, you know, securing our borders. I don't think the administration intends to. I think that they have a different worldview. I think they want a multicultural, multilingual society, and they really want to change America, and they are intentionally leaving our borders open for that very purpose. Would you agree or disagree with that?
Oh, I agree. I think a lot of the people that are involved in this are the one world philosophers that think Canada, Mexico, and the United States should be one country. As you say, they refuse to build the wall. They won't put the military on the border. They're letting more and more illegals come in. But it's been proven that not only drugs are affecting our national security with all the cartels that are operating heavily in Atlanta, Miami, Chicago, Los Angeles, San Francisco. It's drugs coming in. It's illegals coming in. But it's also the potential terrorists coming in on these 18-wheelers with all the trucks we're letting into Mexico. And I can tell you, Mr. Obama backed down with the Mexican president. He didn't say much at all about border security. So you've got the one world elitists that want open borders, and then the drug people and terrorists can use that and prey on the United States. Certainly Mr. Chavez in Venezuela would like to move up something in the border, terrorist activities. So I think Obama, to a certain extent, really believes that diplomacy is going to work. And I don't think you can negotiate with communists like the Cubans. Remember, the Cubans are still communists, and they've said nothing about what they're going to do about their political prisoners. They engage in drug running. They cooperate with the Venezuelans and FARC to move more drugs into the country. Mr. Obama goes down and practically apologizes to the Mexicans and the Cubans. Well, what are the Cubans and Mexicans going to do for the United States? The Mexicans never say they're going to help stop, and they're a rich country. They never say they're going to stop illegal immigration coming in here. What are the Cubans going to do? Are they going to free all their political prisoners? Are they going to let more democracy come into the country? So what I don't like about, I don't see anything wrong with negotiating with Cubans, Venezuelans, Russians, or the Iranians, but I don't like it when it's tilted to their side more than the United States.
I agree with you, but the question is, why are our leaders always seem to be intent upon favoring the other side rather than the side of freedom? We'll be back in just a moment with John Quirk. Well, John, certainly, what about Venezuela? Certainly, Chavez is down there. Chavez certainly appears to be very much anti-American, almost more anti-American than he is a Marxist.
Gold and silver is tremendously undervalued. Global demand vastly exceeds mine supply by more than 60% annually. There is little in the financial world more certain than a coming explosion in the prices of gold and silver. The U.S. dollar continues to lose value and respect as the world's reserve currency. Our nation faces challenges on many fronts, and a day doesn't pass without another economist bringing forth warnings of impending economic calamity. There has never been a better time than right now to acquire physical gold and silver. Discount Gold and Silver Trading was founded on the principles of truth and honesty. We believe in providing a quality product, quality service, and most importantly, competitive pricing. We provide all forms of precious metals, including American gold, silver, platinum, and rare investment and circulated coins. Silver bars, rounds, and 90% silver bags are on hand for the silver investor. Gold self-directed IRAs are available. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. Toll free, that's 1-800-375-4188.
Most Americans are iodine deficient today because they stopped adding iodine to our milk and to our flour, and only about half of the salt that's consumed in the United States today contains iodine. So Radio Liberty has produced a four-tape or a four-CD set that discusses the health benefits of iodine. We also offer iodorol. It contains 12.5 milligrams of iodine per tablet. And we also offer potassium iodide tablets that'll protect your thyroid gland in case there's a nuclear attack. So if you'd like to order these products or obtain additional information, why don't you call 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. Or go to our website at radioliberty.com. That's radioliberty.com. Once again, our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927.
Did you know that there's an increasing amount of scientific data which says that fluoride in drinking water is dangerous? Are you aware that your drinking water may in fact contain many unhealthy substances, even things which can cause sickness or disease? If you'd like information on how to remove these contaminants, find out about the Verkey water filter. You can call 800-544-8927 for complete information. There is a way to return to having pure, safe drinking water. The Verkey water filter. Call 800-544-8927 for information about a product that could protect you and your family from waterborne disease. The number to call is 800-544-8927. Call today.
This is Pastor David Whitney with Institute on the Constitution. Our founders constructed this constitutional republic with the intent that citizens would function as the final check on the power of civil government. But that design would only work if the citizens understood our form of government as well as their responsibilities within that structure. That's why Institute on the Constitution has put together a host kit that enables anyone, anywhere, with any group of people to instruct them on our founding documents. We urge you to order a host kit. You can call us toll free at 866-730-9796. That's 866-730-9796. Or you can order it on the web. Go to our website, iotconline.com. The only way our republic will survive is if its citizens arm themselves with the knowledge of our founding fathers' original intent of the Constitution, the Declaration, and the Bill of Rights. Call us, 866-730-9796.
Not going to be out of this in 6 to 9 months because you can't actually solve a problem that's created by spending and borrowing, by more spending and borrowing, and that's exactly what they're doing. In fact, the biggest threat to America right today is the destruction of the value of our currency. And what we need, of course, is actually saving and production rather than spending and consumption. And yet they're doing everything they can to discourage production here in the United States by an active program of sending our jobs overseas, by keeping our tariffs low so that really our industries cannot effectively compete with what's going on overseas. And I am very, very concerned that this recession could go on, 3 years, 5 years, even 10 years, as long as the government keeps interfering and we keep doing exactly what we did that got us into the mess.
Well, you're right, and I think there's three other things that are affecting the economy that Mr. Obama wants to do, which is going to hurt the economy in the long run. One, he wants to slash a lot of money going into our universities for research and development. And our universities have already had, always had billions of dollars for research and development. A lot of it is wasted, but in the end, we do get a new Cisco or Microsoft or Intel. He's cutting that back. He's cutting the Pentagon systems back, which there is a lot of waste, everybody knows, in the Pentagon. But a lot of those things in the Pentagon, and I'm not talking about the huge military-industrial complex, but what we have now creates jobs, making airplanes, making ships. I mean, I wish we could do it another way. I wish we could build more bridges and fix the roads and help our people more with health care. But the military-industrial complex, if you will, even at this level, does create lots of jobs. So he's going to cause more unemployment by cutting Pentagon weapon systems back. I don't know where he intends for other people to work, because the auto industry is in trouble. They do a lot of military contracting. We have other industries. The housing industry is, according to my sources, is not going to come out for probably another year. In South Florida alone, we have about 140,000 condos and probably 5,000 to 10,000 foreclosures a week. Our real estate market in Florida is wiped out. No real estate closings. We have three or four major law firms that majored in real estate closing. Title companies are closing. Mortgage companies are closing. And just nobody's buying any houses. And we're not getting an influx from Europe or Latin America like we used to in Florida to purchase houses. A lot of the northerners that are coming down here were wiped out with major frauds like Madoff, or wiped out in the stock market, or the TARP or the bailouts. So if he doesn't, or the banks aren't forced to turn around housing, and we don't start selling cars, and unemployment keeps going up, I think you're absolutely right. I think that the economy could take a nosedive. I think that if he starts to force the banks to loan money for housing, they'll will gradually inch up. But if he doesn't do that, my sources in the economy, you know, in the housing area, say we could be in the recession for the next 2 years.
Well, it's going to be very interesting to see how this plays out, but I think that, you know, we're going to have a lot more people lose their homes, a lot more people lose their jobs, a lot more people lose hope, and this is one of the most tragic situations. And then what happens when the unemployment benefits eventually run out 6 months to a year from now? They've certainly extended the unemployment benefits for another 20 months. Of course, in many other countries throughout the world, they don't have these unemployment benefits, and we're seeing increasing political instability in other countries. Things are not as bad here as elsewhere, but I think that they're going to get, well, I think they're going to get a lot worse. So I'm very, very concerned about, you know, the stability of our society, as all this wonderful utopian existence we've had for such a long period of time, based entirely on imaginary money, by the banks being able to create massive amounts of money out of nothing and let it out, and the good times are here. And now the banks are, frankly, the large banks are refusing to loan, the small banks are afraid to loan, and the Fed is doing everything they can, Federal Reserve System, to prevent them from loaning. And how do they do that? Why, they're paying the banks interest. And the first time in all recorded history, paying interest on the reserves that are deposited there. And they pulled all the money that the banks ordinarily would be lending out of circulation. And I just don't understand why they're doing that if they're really trying to solve the problem. Looks to me like the Federal Reserve System, by paying interest and sucking almost a half $1 trillion out of the economy, is doing everything they can to prolong that the recession. But, of course, they can't tell the American people that. And nobody ever asked that question publicly. Well, Well, John, you know, what can people do? The average person out here, you know, has a rather helpless feeling. I think we saw some of that frustration demonstrated on the tax day on April 15th, with already thousands of people, I think in at least 700 demonstrations all across America, were demonstrating against what's going on. Of course, they were demonstrating against the taxes, but of course, they ought to be demonstrating against the forces that have created this whole economic contraction, because I think it was, I believe it was intentionally created. I don't think it happened by accident. Certainly the banks that issued the fraudulent bonds, the housing bonds, they're not being held accountable. The rating companies, Moody's and Standard & Poor's, that gave AAA ratings to obviously fraudulent bonds are not being held responsible for that. And then, of course, we're bailing out the very banks that created the problems. So it seems like we're doing almost everything wrong to address the problem. Why don't we just let those big banks go down? They say they're too big to fail. I think they're too big to maintain. And they ought to be treated the same as every other small bank. If a small bank does irresponsible things, they close it down. Why don't they close down the big banks as well?
Well, they probably should, and, you know, when you talk to the banks out here, we have a lot of banks in South Florida, you know, from New York, and when you get to know the bank officers, they'll tell you, they'll say, A, we're not giving personal loans anymore. B, we're not loaning on car loans anymore. C, we're only going to do some SBA loans, and even though we're asking you for applications to refinance your home, we're really not going to give you any mortgages. That is absolute among the big banks and little banks here, and the government hasn't done anything to push them forward. The government's given them all the money. They're making a lot of money. The banks are starting to build up their capital reserves, but there's no indication, at least for 6 to 9 months, that they're going to loan money. So there's lots of people hurting. What's interesting here is the resilience of a lot of people. A lot of people are now working 2 and 3 part-time jobs. They're working, say, for a publishing company or a collection agency, or they're working, you know, part-time as a realtor hoping things work out, but they're getting a job in the store or McDonald's or somewhere else, and they seem to be surviving. One of the problems is all the college graduates that get out, we hire students with Middle Eastern backgrounds.
Now hold that thought, John. We'll be back here in just a moment with John Quirk talking about what's going on. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest, of course, is John Quirk, and we're just talking about what's happening economically. And, of course, John was saying that in Florida, where he lives, the banks, the small banks, and even the larger banks there, of course, we're not talking about the major investment banks, the Goldman Sachs, the Big Nine that are still there, that really go back 100 years, that are really, I think, instrumental in creating the problem. But the small banks are not the lending money. And that really is quite true. I talked to a local bank manager this week, and I asked her about loans, and she said, well, if you have the money here on deposit in the central, in the CD, or you have the money on deposit in the bank, we'll be glad to give you a loan, but we can't give you the loan without security. And I said, look, if I had money in a CD in your bank, or if I had money on deposit, I mean, I'd use my own money. I wouldn't borrow it from you and have to pay interest on it. We laughed about that. But you're right. The banks are frightened to loan because, of course, if they give housing loans, why, that the price of homes keeps falling. They could very well end up getting the mortgage back secured by a house that was worth far less than the mortgage. So I think a lot of our small banks are quite frankly afraid to loan, and they should be. So you go right ahead with the story.
Well, I think that's right, and I think that as the economy goes up and down, you know, as unemployment increases, which it is definitely going to increase, and even if you have positive signs with, like, Citibank stock in a few weeks went from $1 to over $4, there looks like some bright signs there. But then you've got negative signs on the trade deficit. You've got negative signs on the Chinese being reluctant to keep funding us and our problems. You've got positive signs. I think the whole thing for the economy is going to be affected by the national security policy. And the positive thing is if we do have verifiable diplomacy, and whether it's in the Middle East or Latin America, if we're able and this is Obama's approach. His approach is basically security, diplomacy, soft power, and peacemaking should be pursued based on diplomatic and economic reasons. If that goes forward, the odd person out is still a major terrorism attack. And a major terrorism attack in the United States would cause this whole cycle to go again. We would have to spend more money on military and homeland security, which we don't have, which means we'd have to borrow from the Chinese, and they may be reluctant to loan us money. The economy would travel, and tourism and so on would take another hit like it did after 9/11. And I can tell you just from my sources and foreign intelligence services that our enemies are planning a major hit against the United States. We've had tremendous luck and success with Bush, and not many people give Bush credit about Iraq. They're all disgusted about it, but democracy is flourishing there. And while Obama seems to be soft on Iran, he's planning to spend trillion dollars in Afghanistan. That's a fait accompli. So I don't know how we're going to get all the money to fund what we're doing in Afghanistan and the problems we have in the United States. And I don't think he does either. I don't think he or his economic advisors even think of that.
Well, I think they, well, what we see this last week, they've begun monetizing the debt. And I think they had invested some $20, $30 billion simply buying up debt. And, of course, this is a wonderful way. You just keep printing money. You don't actually print it. You just create an electronic entry and you make the money. But this is the path to what happened in the Weimar Republic. This is the path of what happened in Zimbabwe. And, of course, when you start monetizing the debt, which we are doing, which many other countries throughout the world are doing, and when Obama keeps giving money away, he promises, you know, $100 billion there and $1 trillion there, and he doesn't have the money, so he's just going to create it. There's no better way to destroy a nation than to debauch the currency, and that is apparently what Mr. Obama and the people who surround him, or who I believe control him, really seem to want to do. Why would anybody want to debauch our currency and destroy our nation? Well, I really believe there are people who have a different worldview. Well, John, would you be willing to answer some questions if we open the lines to callers?
Absolutely. Be happy to.
All right, fine. Well, we'll just put that offer out. If you're out there and you have a question for John Quirk, who's certainly been close to intelligence agencies and still is very, very close to them and has connections throughout the world, our number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. But, John, are you concerned about the monetary stability of our nation as we see the Fed doing something they have never done before, and that is begin to monetize debt because they can't borrow the money and begin to then increase rapidly the money supply with all the frightening implications of that policy?
Yes, I am, but I'm not as worried with the people that really kind of control us at this stage for giving us money and revenue, and that's the Chinese. The Chinese, surprisingly, up to this time, have been very, very supportive of the United States. And what's interesting is Obama is looking to the Mideast, he's looking to Latin America, he's looking to Mexico, but he hasn't planned any dialogue with the Chinese. And I would think that people like Obama and Geithner and Summers would be trying to set up an economic summit with our bank. The Chinese are basically our bank. And I don't know if they're afraid that the Chinese are going to make a lot of demands in terms of trade in Taiwan, or they just haven't got around to it, or they're busy. So I would say that a lot of our, to answer your question, a lot of our future economic plans and policies have to be our relationships with China. And so far, China's been pretty good to us. We're kind of connected them. They need us. We need them. But over the last couple of weeks, they've made some kind of threatening moves about they want us to get our economic house in order before they keep loaning us money. And I think what that means is we've got to get housing started. The banks have to do more. And we have to stop. We have to stop just bailing out everybody without any, you know, without any guidelines or criteria for what we're doing.
Well, of course, you mentioned there's no dialogue with China. I think they're behind-the-scenes dialogues with China. There's an organization known as the Group of 30, and any of our listeners can go up on the Internet and type in Group of 30, and you'll pull down their website. You'll find there that there are 30 people who really run the economics of the world, and, of course, these are 30 of the key economic people, and who are they? Why, there's Timothy Geithner. There's Larry Summers. There is, of course, Paul Volcker. And there is the chairman of the Bank of Japan. Pardon me, the Bank of China. And I've forgotten his name. But anyway, he's listed there. Anybody can pull that down off the Internet. Nobody ever talks about the Group of 30, the people who really run the finances of the world. And yet, so there's all sorts of behind-the-scenes things going on that, of course, they never tell us common people about. So the Group of 30 is never talked about in public. You'll never read about it. But go up on the Internet, type in Group of 30. You can get their names. You can check them out. You'll find out that the man with the Chinese name there is Chinese. He's the head of, he runs economics in China, just like Geithner and Larry Summers run them here in the United States. Well, let's go to GD, who's calling from Aptos. Hi, GD. Do you have a question for our guest?
I have heard from our Secretary of State, Hillary Clinton.
You're going to have to speak up a little louder, please.
Okay. I have heard from our Secretary of State, Hillary Clinton, and Obama in their speeches that guns are coming from the United States. And my question to your guest is, where are the guns coming from? Are they coming from the United States, or are they coming somewhere else?
And I think that's a very legitimate question, Jeannie, because they're trying to use this all these guns coming from the United States to Mexico to justify gun registration or gun confiscation or call it what you will here in the United States. What are your thoughts on that, John?
Well, I think when Obama and Clinton and Eric Holder say that, it's a great exaggeration. They're trying to blame the United States about shipping guns down Mexico. Actually, a lot of automatic weapons are transshipped through the Panama Canal. They don't even land in the United States, and they go right to Mexico in that new container port that Hutchinson-Wampaugh built. Hutchinson-Wampaugh, and Costco had the scandal in Long Beach, California about espionage, and we put pressure on them. So they built a big port, which is all part of NAFTA, down in Mazatlan, and a lot of automatic weapons go down there. The Mexicans actually, there's no hard facts about the percentage. They get a lot of their weapons from FARC in Colombia, the terrorist groups, because they're drug dealers. They move cocaine and marijuana, and their partners and the Colombians. And I know this for a fact because I used to work on Plan Colombia. Their partners in the drug business have lots of sources for drugs, for guns. Russians, Chinese, Cubans, and so on. So I think, yes, they do get some guns. They do get some guns from the United States, but it's greatly exaggerated. I'll tell you why. ATF, Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms, keeps tremendous databases and inventory on all firearms licensees. It's not that easy to buy a gun. You have to have a firearms license, and it's not that easy to ship guns across the border. ATF, we have a whole federal agency just monitors that, and you haven't heard anything about ATF about illegal firearms, because ATF does a very good job on intercepting them. So I think this is a gross exaggeration by the Obama administration to really undermine Second Amendment rights on the right to own firearms.
All right, Gene, does that answer your question?
Yeah, and one other thing, I just got word from Venezuela that the Russians are actually funding a huge AK-47 gun factory in Venezuela. So we've got a real problem south of us, Doctor.
Oh, I'm sure we do.
That's been known for some time. I lived in Venezuela for several years, and I write articles on Chavez. And Chavez bought 275,000 AK-47s, and he's given it to the people that support him, the Chavistas who live up in the ranchos. And he's building a number of factories there, an ammunition factory. He's building, you're right, an AK-47 factory. And worse than that, the Iranian engineers and nuclear scientists work in the Venezuelan nuclear plant. It's called IVIC, I-V-I-C. And there's lots of things going on in Venezuela. We have rumors about biological warfare plants, Hezbollah setting up training camps there. The Chinese and Iranians are all over the place. So he, I believe, is our biggest national security threat. And our policymakers, even going back to Bush and certainly Obama, have ignored this.
Okay, Jeannie, thank you very much.
Yeah, that was a good answer. I appreciate his honesty.
Thank you so much. Bye-bye. Well, let's go to Tim, who's calling us from Massachusetts. Hey, Tim, what part of Massachusetts are you in?
Call from the Boston area.
All right, fine. You have a question. Are you hearing us on shortwave or on the Internet?
I'm hearing you on shortwave.
Okay, very good. Coming in all right?
Yes, it is.
Okay, fine. You have a question or comment?
I have a question for your guest. I just have a quick question regarding Iran. Now, if Iran was to ever build a nuclear bomb, what does your guest think they would do with it? Does he think they would drop it on Israel and commit national suicide?
No, I don't think they'd drop it on Israel because the Israelis have already warned them and the Iranians know that Israel has tactical nuclear weapons. I think they want to use it as a threat in the region. It would give them, in their view, tremendous prestige in the region. It would make them part of the nuclear family, okay? And then the subtle threat is that they could also give it to Hezbollah, and Hezbollah could possibly secretly use it against the Israelis. This is why the Israelis probably will eventually take the Iranians out if they don't get support from the United States. The Israelis, and I deal with lots of Israelis here and overseas, their level of paranoia has gone up just unbelievably. I mean, they don't trust American intelligence. They're hoping that the United States does not abandon them in the Middle East peace talks with the Palestinians. They're hoping that we don't give in too quickly on Iran, but their level of paranoia is increasing dramatically. And I don't think, no matter what happens out there, I don't think the Israelis will put up with a nuclear Iran.
Well, you know, I mean, I just want to bring out another point, because you said, well, if this situation is allowed to exist, that Iran would exert more influence in the area. I just find that kind of curious, being that Iranians are Shias, and most of the other Arab world are Sunnis, and Sunnis and Shias do not get along. The only way they are going to get along is if we continue to push everybody around and basically push them all together to cooperate against us. So I think this is the same argument that they used in Iraq, and I just think it's folly, and I think we ought to mind our own business.
All right, fine. Thanks very much, Tim. I appreciate your call. All right, fine. Well, that was Tim calling from Massachusetts. He thinks maybe we ought to just ought to pull out and let them solve the problems themselves. And anyway, it's going to be very interesting to see how this develops, because certainly the people who control the Obama administration seem to have policies which are, well, threatening as far as I'm concerned, the very stability of our nation. And I'm not talking about the threat from Iran, and I'm not talking about the threat from Venezuela. I'm talking about the threat to the destruction of the value of our currency, which is growing on a daily basis. Well, John, we've just got a few more minutes. So are there any other important issues you'd like to bring up? What about our relationship with China? Certainly, China is, you know, certainly making some rumbles about stopping using the American currency as a reserve currency, talking about maybe not purchasing as many of our treasury bonds and agency bonds as they have in the past. And we are really totally dependent upon that brutal communist regime to finance our deficits. How did we ever get ourselves, or let ourselves get put into that sort of a situation?
Well, I'll tell you, if putting myself in the position of the Chinese, because we owe them so much money, even though trade goes back and forth, you have to watch out for what the Chinese may do to us in terms of a possible extortion. They may want more leeway on Taiwan. They may want us to abandon Taiwan. They may want us to stop harping about human rights. They may want us to stop trying to hinder their development of a blue water navy and missile development, which the Chinese want. They want to dominate the shipping lanes, and they're certainly expanding in South Florida, the Caribbean, and Latin America big time. The economy hasn't held them down. They're buying everything up in the Bahamas and the hotels, and they're expanding their port facilities and so on and so forth. So far, the Chinese, diplomatically, have been very good to the United States. They haven't jumped on the Russian bandwagon against us. They are expanding in Venezuela. They help the Venezuelans. They are expanding, but it's more for trade. It's for more revenue, and that's what they want, more trade and revenue. But I think over the next few months, you can watch how the Chinese behave.
Hold that thought, we'll be right
back. Weapon systems.
All right, well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is John Quirk. We've got 3 minutes to wrap up the program. And of course, John has just been talking about our relationships with China. But you know, John, recently we...
Heart disease is on the rise. Clogged arteries, high blood pressure, and high cholesterol levels may not be fully detected by you, but the symptoms are there. Loss of energy, blood sugar spikes and drops, poor circulation, and irregular heartbeat are just a few of these that can alert you that something is wrong. Hear how Heart and Body Extract is making a difference in thousands of people's lives across America.
My blood pressure has normalized. My diabetes has totally improved.
Everyone is telling me now how much healthier I look, and I'm telling everyone how much healthier I feel. I recommend Heart and Body Extract to everyone.
Anybody over 40 in the North American continent should be using this product as a preventative to keep their cardiovascular system healthy.
Order your 2-month supply today by calling 866-295-5305. That's 866-295-5305. Or order online, hbextract.com. Heart and Body Extract, 866-295-5305 or hbextract.com.
With food prices soaring to all-time highs, as the dollar continues to fall in value, what can you and your family do to guarantee that fresh, nutritious vegetables will make it to your dinner table? Garden in a Can. Garden in a Can is your source for premium, long-term storable seeds. Garden in a Can is ready when you are. Plant them now or store them for when you really need them. There are 16 large, hermetically sealed, non-hybrid, open-pollinated packets of seeds, along with detailed planting instructions sealed in a can for ultimate long-term protection. Garden in a Can. It's that simple. Fresh, healthy, easy. Only $69.95 for over a half acre of safe, fresh vegetables. Ready when you are. Stop procrastinating and start preparing with Garden in a Can. For more details, visit GardenInACan.com today. That's GardenInACan.com or call 866-598-7396, 866-598-7396.
This is Pastor David Whitney with Institute on the Constitution. Our founders constructed this constitutional republic with the intent that citizens would function as the final check on the power of civil government. But that design would only work if the citizens understood our form of government as well as their responsibilities within that structure. That's why Institute on the Constitution has put together a host kit that enables anyone, anywhere, with any group of people to instruct them on our founding documents. We urge you to order a host kit. You can call us toll free at 866-730-9796. That's 866-730-9796. Or you can order it on the web. Go to our website, iotconline.com. The only way our republic will survive is if its citizens arm themselves with the knowledge of our founding fathers' original intent of the Constitution, the Declaration, and the Bill of Rights. Call us, 866-730-9796.
To have him as a guest here. And, of course, his comment was that he's hearing from his friends that China is doing today exactly what Japan did before the Second World War. They're going around and buying up every bit of scrap metal they can. They're laying in all sorts of supplies, which, of course, could be used for manufacturing, but it also could be used for war. And I think, ladies and gentlemen, you're going to have to watch things very, very carefully because tradition tells us when the countries get into terrible economic problems, sometimes the only way out is a war, and I really believe that's exactly what our leaders intend. And I believe this war, of course, is going to be not only a conventional war, but a nuclear war. If you haven't read my story of state secrets, January 2008, go to my newsletter. Go to my website, radioliberty.com. Pull down the January 2008 newsletter and read it. It's the story of Sybil Edmonds and how our State Department has been intentionally allowing the transfer of nuclear technology to Pakistan so that it could be given to Iran and the other Muslim nations. The only logical explanation for that and the concealment from the American people, because this is known throughout the rest of the world but not here in America, is that they're planning on a nuclear war. Make your preparations accordingly. You're going to have to look after yourself. If you haven't laid in a supply, a long-term supply of food, you'd like to know more about that, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. If you'd like, of course, to get your Bertie Berkey water filter, if you'd like to have a supply of immune support, or basically the vitamins and minerals and health products that we take regularly, why, we'd be glad to send you one of our catalogs and lay in a good supply so that you'll have them on hand. And, of course, make sure you're in a proper relationship with our Lord. First of all, our telephone number is 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. How do you understand what's really going on today and why we are actually helping our enemies? We brought Fidel Castro to power. If you don't believe that, why, you need to see my interview with the American ambassador to Cuba, Earl Smith, where he will tell you that the American State Department brought Fidel Castro to power knowing he was a communist, and we've kept him in power. You can see the DVD, The World Revolution, then by David Rockefeller's memoirs. That's memoirs. And, there you'll find that David Rockefeller's daughters are very good friends of Fidel Castro. They go down to meet with him regularly. In fact, David Rockefeller, the head of the Trilateral Commission and the Council on Foreign Relations, and one of the organizers, a permanent record of the member of the Bilderbergers, he's met with Fidel Castro at least on one occasion. Why are these things happening? Because nothing is it appears to be. And there are powerful spirits and forces behind everything going on. You need to hear my talk on the forbidden secret. The forbidden secret and the syllabus that goes with that. Our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. And then you need to get the series, The Final Countdown. Our interviews, pardon me, they're DVDs put forward by Pastor Billy Crone. They're 2 5 DVD sets, part one and part two, that will give you tremendous insight into the prophetic forces at work, and of course how so many of the things happening today were prophesied long ago. We have CDs of the first five of the first set. That's called Countdown to Armageddon. That's the CD, and of course you can get the DVD sets. The Final Countdown, Part 1, Part 2. And understand, we're really involved in a spiritual battle that's being carried out on a political, ideological, and cultural battlefield. There really is a supernatural dimension. There really are spiritual forces at work. If you get any of the items we offered, why, ask for a copy of The Working of the Spiritual Hierarchy. It's a pamphlet put out by the Luciferians. It will tell you exactly what they're doing and where their people are stationed. And, well, we'll be back in just a moment for the next hour. Please pray for America, but pray for Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, that illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, and, well, right now, for the next hour, they're going to be the views of our good friend William Grigg, former editor, senior editor of the New American Magazine, and now appears regularly here every Friday evening and sometimes in the midweek here on Radio Liberty, for keeping us abreast of the things that are going on. Ladies and gentlemen, we're living in the most dangerous times in our nation's history. The enemy is not over in a cave in Pakistan or sitting in a palace in Tehran or sitting in a temple over in communist China or sitting in an office building in Russia. The enemy is right here in the United States. America is under attack today. They're destroying the moral fabric of our society. They're distorting our view of history. They've undermined our belief in the Constitution. They have turned our people against God. And, of course, they are now in the process of destroying the value of our currency. And there's no better way to destroy a nation than to destroy their currency. And just as last week, we find out that they are beginning to monetize our currency at a frightening rate. And believe me, this is a prelude to the destruction of the nation that we love. Well, that is the background. Let's go to William Grigg. Hi, William. How are you doing?
Dr. Stan, I'm doing great. It's always a blessing to be with you.
Well, why don't you pick up the story from there?
You certainly sketched out a very ominous description of the horizon, and we're very rapidly approaching horizon, I had to point out, and people in this country are waking up, but in a frustrated and sort of distracted way. People are focusing a little bit too much on those themes which are easily converted into sort of mock populist tropes. We have this Tea Party on Tax Day, these Tea Parties across the country on the 15th, just a couple of days ago, which was a useful exercise. I love to see people getting outraged over anything that the government is doing to make our lives miserable. But the problem, of course, is that most of these were co-opted by one element of the two-headed establishment party. It was co-opted by the Republican National Committee, and that's one head of the two-headed beast that is the bipartisan establishment. And so we had a lot of outrage directed at Barack Obama, and a lot of outrage should be directed at him. A lot of it is entirely proper. And we heard a lot of themes being hammered home about the evils of taxation. Taxation, of course, is onerous and an evil that is persistent throughout human history. We heard a lot of people frustrated about things that are going on with respect to regulation and the bailout of Wall Street, but it was all pitched in a partisan key. There were occasional episodes, such as, for instance, number of these Tea Parties where the Ron Paul movement was salient, where people were trying to reach beyond the standard bipartisan or partisan narrative and talk in terms of the Constitution and how the problem here is that the government has split the bonds of the Constitution and that an elite controlling the government is creating a monstrosity to replace the republic that we were given by our founding fathers. That's all very useful. But the dominant themes, unfortunately, were all very partisan in nature. And this is a week, of course, that has been dominated as well by outrage over the Department of Homeland Security report about the supposed threat of what is called the radical right. And the radical right is described in that report in a fashion familiar to students of the so-called watchdog movement, the left-wing watchdogs who have been trying to indoctrinate, propagandize law enforcement for the better part of three decades now. The right wing is described basically as a conflation of everything that the establishment left doesn't like.
Hold that thought. We'll be back here in just a moment. Our guest is William Grigg, and we're talking about, of course, this new report out from the Office of Homeland Security that really insults everyone.
Yes. I mean, unless you're a card-carrying Trotskyite or somebody who is a member of the American Friends of Albania in college, chances are you qualify to be considered part of the radical right in that report. It was put out by an appendage of the Homeland Security Department called the Homeland Environment Threat Analysis Division, and it attacks really anybody who has a perspective on government that is drawn from the Constitution and Federalist Papers, in addition to people who are affiliated with groups that would be more conventionally considered to be hate groups. We're talking, of course, in that category about white supremacist groups, Aryan supremacist groups, the Ku Klux Klan, other groups of the sort that are being kept alive, quite frankly, by the life support provided to them by the same federal government producing reports of this kind. But in addition to people of that sort who are put in there to give sort of a flavor, an unsavory flavor to the entire mix, you have anybody who is, for instance, more loyal to the concept of state and local government than inclined to embrace the idea of the federal government as the target of loyalty. I'm paraphrasing very closely a specific element of that document where it says that if you're somebody who believes that the federal government should have a very minimal role in the administration of political affairs in this country, and that the state and local government should be the most prominent and powerful element of the Federalist system, then you are a right-wing extremist and quite possibly a terrorist. Well, of course, if you read the Federalist Papers, and if you even read the Constitution, the Ninth and Tenth Amendments in particular, with any intelligence, you're going to have that perspective, unless, of course, you reject the Constitution outright. What they're trying to tell us, basically, is that if you are a patriot defined by your attachment to our Constitution and to the rule of law embodied in that document, you're a potential terrorist. You are an enemy of the state that exists. And implicit in that accusation is a very useful admission, to wit, the Constitution has nothing to do with the state that presently governs us. The Constitution is used basically as a type of bait and switch, or as what carnival people would call the okey-doke, where you go for something that is dangling in front of you and you're given something much inferior in exchange. We have the Constitution. It remains, unfortunately, riddled and pockmarked with amendments that derogate from the original vision of the Founding Fathers. I believe that everything after the 13th Amendment really should be dispensed with. But the fact is that the Constitution, in the written form that we have it, if you ignore the appurtenances of that have been added to it since particularly 1913, it's still a very admirable document.
Hold that thought, William. We'll be right back in just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan. I guess it's William Gregg, and basically talking about the importance of our Constitution. Certainly, if we were to ignore everything after the 13th Amendment, we'd be far better off, but we still have to accept that as the law of the land, even though we don't like it. But the Constitution itself and the first 13 amendments were amazing and certainly really provided the maximum amount of security and freedom of any document ever created by mankind. So you pick this story up there, William.
The fact is, we have this document, and it's written in a way that's really intelligible to anybody who will exercise just a particle of effort in overcoming the archaic language. The concepts are not that difficult to understand. If you're somebody who's a reasonably intelligent sixth grader, you'll be able to understand the Constitution. If you're somebody who's a reasonably intelligent fourth or fifth grader, you should be able to understand the Constitution. My second grader, Jefferson Leonidas, understands the Constitution in terms of its basic principles. You separate powers. You assign some powers to the executive, some to the legislative, some to the judiciary. You understand that they have separate roles to carry out, and you really couldn't say that one of them really runs things. And the reason you do this is because you're suspicious of people who exercise power. A second grader can understand that. So if you look at the Constitution, you read it with a reasonable amount of intelligence, you're going to understand that the way that our government functions right now has little, if anything, to do with the Constitution. And the fact now that the Department of Homeland Security has defined those of us who are constitutionalists, who understand that the reserve powers clauses of the Ninth and Tenth Amendment, for instance, ensure that the only proper allotment of powers is to have the state and local government doing most everything and the federal government doing next to nothing. If you believe that that is the proper scheme for government, you're an enemy of the state that exists and quite possibly a terrorist in embryo. And in that admission, of course, as I said, resides a very important acknowledgement, tacit or implicit though it might be, namely that the government ruling us right now is our enemy as defined by the Constitution. And so this is the week that has been defined by this narrative. A lot of the Republicans who applauded the centralization of power in the 8 years of the Bush administration and the idea that the government would be involved in intense scrutiny of the political beliefs and affiliations and sentiments of the public in the supposed name of protecting us against terrorism. A lot of those same Republican-leading bloggers and commentators and pundits and activists now are incensed that under the administration of Barack Obama, we have the Department of Homeland Security identifying the radical right as a domestic enemy. Well, these people weren't paying attention very carefully during those 8 years. They didn't recognize that, A, when you consolidate powers in the central government the way that was going on under the Bush administration, eventually those powers are going to be exercised by somebody whose political opinions you don't particularly care for. And so you never go about building a weapon that your enemy is going to be able to use against you. That's point A. And they didn't notice point B either, which was that Mr. Bush was no part of a conservative. And there's a subsidiary point to point B, and that is that this document was actually being prepared during the last quarter of 2008. It was a holdover from the Bush administration. And in an essay that I published on my blog and then was also republished on LouRockwell.com just yesterday, well, this morning, actually, April 17th, the essay deals with this Homeland Security document, and it also deals with the Waco episode of 1993 and the Ruby Ridge episode of 1992. And I point out that in the institutional mind of what we could call the conservative movement, the sins of the Clinton era are dominated by Waco, and there's always this, well, not always, but quite frequently, this tendency to telescope events to where we remember Waco and Ruby Ridge, and many people remembering those two events together blame Clinton for both of them, when in fact Clinton had very little to do with Waco and nothing at all to do with Ruby Ridge. Ruby Ridge occurred in 1992. That was the attack on the Weaver family here in Idaho, in northern Idaho. And that has its roots going back to the early 1990s, even the late 1980s. That all took place during the reign of George Bush the Elder. And the Waco episode was being planned in October, November, December of 1992, while George Bush the Elder was in the process of losing his reelection bid to Bill Clinton. And the go order for the raid on the Branch Davidian Church and Sanctuary in Mount Carmel, Texas, the anniversary of which we would have commemorated in February of this year, but the final conflagration growing out of that original criminal raid, we will commemorate on Sunday. But all this was planned and put into motion before Bill Clinton came to office. Bill Clinton didn't come into office until after, of course, noon of January 20th in 1993. And it was before that time that the ATF had its orders to go out and take out the Branch Davidians. So this is all being planned during a Republican administration under the reign of George W. Bush and then Attorney General Richard Thornburgh. And yet we blame Bill Clinton and Janet Reno for this. Now, Bill Clinton and Janet Reno should have known better than to carry out or to permit the ATF to carry out the attack on the Branch Davidian Church and Sanctuary. And they certainly should have known better than to allow this to become militarized. And they certainly should not have helped frame this in such a way that it looked as if this were a mass suicide or some kind of a justifiable assault on dangerous so-called cultists. But the fact is, all this was done, all this was prepared during a Republican administration. So fast forward to 2008, and then, 15 years after this whole tawdry mess erupted, you have George W. Bush, the younger Bush, in his administration, after creating this monstrosity of the Homeland Security apparatus, creating in the last months of his administration the template and many of the details that went into this report on the radical right. And so I really think that there's not just some interesting historical coincidences here. I think there's some continuities. I really think that if you take a look at what happened between 1993 and 1995, there was a growing backlash against Clintonian rule, the sense that he represented something culturally and politically foreign to our country, as most people understood it, that he and his administration were enemies of the right to keep and bear arms, that they were trying to enact policies that would result in mass redistribution of wealth, and that they were regulating business in ways that were unhealthy, and trying to get us involved in multilateral and globalist institutions that derogated from our national sovereignty. You have many of those same sentiments, of course, now at fever pitch in the first couple of months of the Obama administration. And at the same time, during those 2 years, 1993 to 1995, there was a growing institutional scrutiny of the so-called radical right. There were alerts being put out by left-wing watchdog groups such as the ADL and the so-called Southern Poverty Law Center that were being used as templates for law enforcement lists. And this all culminated on April 19th with the bombing of the Murrah Building in Oklahoma City, an event in which the federal government was directly involved in terms of creating the circumstances and employing and controlling many of the people who were secondary or tertiary participants in the act. And after April 19th of 1995, suddenly the onus shifted, and where most of the public was sympathetic to the complaints of the so-called radical right before April 19th, 1995, after that, for at least a year and a half or so, the radical right was looked upon as a domestic enemy. You have this remarkable spectacle of Bill Clinton coming home from Russia in, I believe it was May of 1995. He was over there to celebrate the victory of Stalin in World War II. And he went to the University of, I believe, Montana, because there was a very active militia movement, citizens' militia movement in Montana. And he gave a speech in which he said, if you hear people denigrating the government that Bill Clinton presided over, that you ought to double up your fist and stick it in the sky and shout them down. Now, I think that was Bill Clinton becoming just a little bit too candid about his own political background and sentiments, because, of course, that's the sort of conduct you would have seen in Red Square, denouncing the enemies of the so-called proletariat, or that you would have seen in the Cultural Revolution in Mao's China. And he just got back from a trip to Russia where he'd, I guess, gone back to explore the heritage and pedigree of his own political leanings and affiliations. But for whatever reason, he came back from Russia fortified in his determination to try to isolate and demonize the enemies of his government. And I can't help but think that there's a similar dynamic at work right now, where suddenly the Department of Homeland Security is making it official that if you're somebody who's a constitutionalist by inclination, you're somebody who deserves the scrutiny of law enforcement and perhaps needs to be kept on a list somewhere as a potential terrorist. You have the Homeland Security Department using seed money to cultivate groups like a group on the campus of the University of Maryland that actually keeps a database of criminal incidents involving people that they call right-wing extremists. And their definition of right-wing extremist is so capacious that it includes anybody who is fixated on the Constitution and the limits on government contained in the Constitution, or anybody who is fixated on the concept of individual rights is considered to be a radical rightist. And so if somebody is, for instance, captured in the commission of an armed robbery, and this person has no particular political affiliations or interests, but somebody can attest that this person at one point had given voice to sentiments about the Constitution or individual rights that meet that definition of radical right-wing extremism, that that name goes on a database by way of illustrating the supposed growing threat posed to law enforcement by so-called right-wingers. Now, that's the climate that's being created right now, and the last time there was an effort anywhere near this intense to control the political climate of opinion that way, as I recall, it was in 1994, and in the early days of 1995, leading up to this horrible event on April 19th. And so this is making my equivalent of a spider sense tingle, is what I'm saying. I don't really have any way yet of proving that this is anything more than a suspicion, but when they start to tune the political atmosphere this way, I get suspicious that something horrible is going to occur in the not terribly distant future that will be laid to the feet of the people they've been taking so much time and energy to demonize.
And I think the other thing that we should recognize is they never would have allowed this to get out and be talked about all across America and circulated this report unless they'd wanted to begin to divide our country and to create a sense of an aura of fear in the hearts of people that they could be on that list. Well, ladies and gentlemen, you all are on that list. They're collecting dossiers on all of us.
Well, that much is true when you talk about the government collecting dossiers on all of us. There is a piece that I wrote about a year ago entitled They Have a Little List, and it was talking about the the main core list, which is a roster which is kept, I believe, at Mount Weather, which is, if memory serves, in Virginia, not terribly far from the capital. And it's a smallish community, sort of a what they used to call a bedroom community. I've got an aerial shot of the Mount Weather complex on my blog, as a matter of fact. And the Mount Weather complex is a subterranean complex, very large, very well equipped. It has state-of-the-art electronics for communications and surveillance. The people who are taken into the Mount Weather facility routinely for training simulations are people in the upper echelons of the executive branch. It was established many decades ago as a survival facility in the event that there were a nuclear exchange between the United States and the Soviet Union. That would be a continuity of government function. They would bring people into this secure location, to use the locution that we became familiar with during Dick Cheney's time as the vice president. He was always kept in a secure location. I would be willing to wager a lot of the time he was at Mount Weather. Well, Mount Weather is the home of this huge computer database called the Main Core. And the Main Core consists of a huge roster and all the pertinent details of anybody who's given any law enforcement or security agency at any level in this country any reason for concerns of any kind. So when you talk about them keeping a little list, they've got a very extensive list. It's something, of course, which includes data which have been sectioned down by the National Security Agency through Echelon and the like. The existence of Echelon is widely acknowledged. It's hardly a state secret anymore. And just this last week, of course, we saw a story in the last few days talking about the fact that at least one congressman was kept illegally under surveillance without warrant or probable cause during the Bush administration. So, yeah, that's another example of how they're letting us know that they're keeping an eye on us and trying to make sure that all of us are kept in the proper taxonomical boxes in the event that they want to make life unpleasant for us. My opinion about that is to assume that if you've done anything worthwhile in your life, you're going to end up on somebody's list. And the people who founded our country, who had a lot more to lose in a lot more compressed time frame, and it would be taken from them in some of the most unpleasant ways imaginable. Anybody who's conversant with the British laws for the punishment of high treason would understand what our founding fathers confronted if they had lost the war for independence. If you don't know what that would be like, go back and watch the last few minutes of the film Braveheart to get an expurgated and sanitized version of what would have been done to each of the founding fathers had they lost the war for independence. And yet when they drafted the Declaration of Independence, John Hancock made sure that his signature was large and conspicuous enough that even Fat George could read it. He put his name on a list. Everybody who signed that document put their names on a list, and of course many of them paid tremendous prices, just horrible, heart-rending prices for doing so. But if you're going to be a free man or live like a free man or aspire to be a free man, every once in a while you're going to have to take the risk of letting your name be put on a list somewhere. And so we should live our lives knowing that if we try to do what's right and stand unbowed and proud and make a conspicuous example of ourselves in defending sound principles, we're going to end up on somebody's list. Just get it over with and then live your life as you would anyway. But it's worth reminding ourselves that, forgive me.
Hold that thought. We'll be back in just a moment here with William Gregg. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and William is simply talking about the fact that they have extensive lists of most of the people in the United States. I would simply point out that if you watch television, you know, and of course the detectives, you know, are trying to find out which one of the possible culprits there were, and so they'll go to the computer and they'll begin pulling up pictures, and they'll have pictures of literally everybody that they're interested in, and many of these people don't even have a criminal record. And you must understand, ladies and gentlemen, they have your picture. They went around to all of the states and they purchased the pictures that you have in your driver's license. Now, you didn't give permission to be sold, but it was sold, and the government lied to get that. Secret Service did that. We have the articles came out of South Carolina telling how they sold the pictures because they thought they were selling to a private corporation, but the government has pictures of everybody. They have dossiers on literally everybody. I have seen my own dossier from the FBI page after page after page of blacked out in the name of national security. Basically, I've seen the have clippings every time I gave a talk during the 1960s and early 1970s. They took the paper clippings. They have people clipping these articles out. They're all there in my file, but I'd certainly like to know what those was behind all of those blacked out pages, because my crime is I've been a patriot all of my life, at least for the last 47 years. And believe me, the FBI is watching patriots. Anybody who is concerned about individual freedom in America, I wonder, of course, what William Ayers, Barack Obama's friend, you know, what his dossier looks like. It's probably, there may not even be one anymore. Who knows? Anyway, pick up the story there. But I think it's so vitally important that American people go to the computer and pull down the information on Project Echelon, E-C-H-E-L-O-N, Echelon, and you'll find out the NSA is monitoring all of your telephone calls and all of your emails and all of your faxes by computer and storing that information so it can be used against you. And it's been going on not simply after since 9/11. It's been going on for 20 or 30 years or more. And you will never hear this talked about in the media. Why? Because the media is controlled by the very people who are in favor of this coming police state. But please go ahead, William.
You're certainly right about that. I remember a couple of things that are relevant in this connection. When I was younger, in my mid-20s, one of the part-time jobs I had when I was, getting started as a journalist was working for a company called Burrell's, which was a clipping agency. And they would do press clippings of newspapers, magazines, journals of all kinds. They actually had a division that would go through paperback books and mass market books of that sort. To my disappointment, I ended up monitoring television. I thought it would be interesting to be reading the print publications, but they had me monitoring television news programs, and they also had another division that would monitor radio talk shows. And what we did was we had a database of terms that we had to search for from paid subscribers of all kinds, and anytime we'd find a term as we were going through any of these media sources I just described, we were supposed to make a note and make a transcript or to cut the article from the relevant print journal or print periodical. Now, because I was watching television, we were using, at the time, VHS cassettes, and we had to listen to them at twice the normal speed, to where it sounded as if you were trying to interpret conversations taking place among chipmunks who were on helium. But the point is, we'd go through, and if we would hear one of the highlighted terms, we would go back, rewind it, then flag it, and then do a transcript of the given news broadcast. And a lot of these clients, I took a look at the client list, were corporations. They wanted to make sure that what they were putting into play by way of what we now call memes or themes that are being promoted as little packets of information that go viral, they wanted to make sure that those were getting into the information stream, whether you're talking about the newspapers or the periodicals, the journals, or radio and television. A number of other clients were celebrities who were simply trying to find out how they were being portrayed in the various media. They were doing what we now call vanity searches. But more than a few of these searches were sponsored by entities which are transparent fronts for the government. You've got, of course, the CIA, which maintains literally dozens or scores of people to do exactly what I was doing for a living, except they're on the taxpayer payroll, and they have far better and more comprehensive access in many, many languages to what's going on. I was doing something of the same nature, and many of the clients I was working for, it turns out, were people from three-letter agencies. I didn't know that at the time, but it's pretty clear that's the sort of thing that goes on all the time.
And they're keeping dossiers, and I think it's important people understand that this is not new. The people, of course, who really run things are very wicked and evil people. They want to maintain the control of America because they're using America's military and financial power to bring about the world government. And believe me, as I analyze what's going on, a number of people I know of have been either threatened or some of them have been imprisoned and some of them have been killed. And what was their crime? Why they were patriots, trying to bring the truth out about what's going on. We'll be covering some of that in our latest newsletter. We'll be back in just a moment.
God bless America.
Yeah, this is Dr. Stan back here, and certainly I was just talking about some of the people that I've known. In fact, a number of people I've known and interviewed have been killed or assassinated. This is not, these people on the other side are not playing games. They're deadly serious, and the only thing I think to preserve any of us, either myself or William or the other people who are doing what we're doing and bringing the truth out, is God's protection and your prayers. So if you're out there in the listening audience, please pray for William, and please pray for myself and my family. But go right ahead, William.
I do appreciate that, Dr. Stan. You know, the point I was warily circling before we went to the break about my days working for this press clipping service, which probably has gone out of business, I would assume now that it's been replaced by Google and by the other search engines which people can use. Although, of course, a search engine and data mining, that type of technology is also used by open source research companies that work for these three-letter agencies. They still do that type of work. There's simply too much of it to be done by one group of people. But they were making sure that the themes that were being promoted by these entities, whether you're talking about corporate entities or quasi-corporate entities working for the government, were getting into the data stream and manipulating the way that people perceived events. It got to the point where I was really cynical about what I was seeing because it was obvious that a lot of the news that we were covering, I was covering primarily the southeastern United States. I was given video cassettes from local network affiliates in what we call the Mid-South and then the Deep South. But the news affiliates in all these various regions were promoting the same stories on the same day within a few hours of each other in pretty much the same language. And so what we were doing is we were providing a feedback mechanism to make sure that the people who had paid to get these themes into the public mind were getting their money's worth. And it really left me jaded and sort of bitter because I was amazed at how little effort it took to get people to be reciting the same ideas which they're being programmed to recite. You know, we call these memes now, but back then, I don't know if there was an adequate term of relatively recent coinage in, say, 1988 or 89 when I was doing this kind of work to describe what was going on. I recognized what was happening, and it probably helped me in, if you will, sort of by way of inoculation to understand some element of how the public mind is molded this way.
Hold that thought. We'll be back in just a moment with Mr. William Grigg right here at Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and William is simply talking about his work, you know, when he was actually listening to video programs, actually finding out what was said there to. And, of course, the whole purpose was to find out what was being said on television or radio, to find out how effective the psychological programs were that were funneling ideas into people's minds and forming their tastes and forming their ideas and forming their worldview. And some corporations certainly wanted to push their products and were doing that. I'm sure there were other people who are actually monitoring the activities. I know, for instance, there was a Dr. Marshall Angell, formerly the senior editor of the New England Journal of Medicine, the most prestigious medical journal in the United States. He had a position at Harvard University. She wrote a book about what you should know about the drug companies, which we do carry, and was very, very critical of the drug companies and their predatory practices and their inhumane attitude towards the public, and certainly their ultimate greed as far as developing medicines and then overcharging for them. And so I was called upon one time to debate somebody who represented the pharmaceutical industry. And in the process of this, I commented, that everything was being done on the part of the drug companies to keep her message off the air. And the fellow on the other side, well, I said, you know, she's been on at least 40 different programs here in the last 6 months. Oh, I said, you are then monitoring what she's doing. And his response was, well, whoa, 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 we have a clipping agency.
Yeah, well, exactly.
Yeah, right. But of course, they were doing everything they could. In fact, they intimidated her to the point where she would not even answer her emails or even consider going on to a radio program. She was put under so much pressure. Why? Because in the United States of America, where we have freedom of speech and freedom of the press, she dared to tell the truth. Go right ahead.
That's a perfect example of what I'm talking about here. And often it wasn't so much a matter of promoting a specific product or a specific service. It was branding. That's the term of art we use now to describe the effort to position a company in the public mind so as to represent a certain quality or a certain virtue. We call branding or rebranding the process of doing this. If you got a company whose name has been run through the mud, let's take a very obvious example, Halliburton. You know, they've run their name through the mud because they've been involved in many, many things that are subversive, criminal, corrupt, illegal, self-regarding in ways that undermine our national security, things of that nature. But there was a real effort to rebrand Halliburton a number of years ago by way of putting out these touching little vignettes on commercial television showing Halliburton providing free telephone communication service for our troops over in Iraq so that when, for instance, a man had been separated from his pregnant wife, found out that his son had been born, he's able to communicate with them by video conference hookup, all free of charge according to our good friends at Halliburton, that kind of thing. In other words, they're trying to position something in the public mind in a very favorable light, and that's a very familiar propaganda technique that's used in political campaigns as well, whether you're talking about transference, where you have somebody put in the context of a number of flags. You always wreath somebody in a patriotic aura that way. And these all go back, of course, to the persuasion or indoctrination tactics pioneered by Edward Bernays almost a century ago. Mr. Bernays was the nephew of Sigmund Freud, and he was also somebody who was on very friendly terms with Walter Lippmann. Walter Lippmann's background goes into the Fabian Socialist Network. He was a founding member of the Council on Foreign Relations. He was one of the people who put together the inquiry, which basically rewrote the map of Europe after World War I and also created the League of Nations Charter. And then Mr. Lippmann went on, still a very young man. He was a remarkably precocious individual. He was in his 20s when he did most of this. As a very young man, he founded the New Republic magazine, where I worked as a an intern in the later mid-1980s. And the New Republic magazine was, for a long time, the most influential journal of political thought in the country. It more or less created the modern progressive movement and also had a great deal to do with the founding of the New Deal and eventually with the creation of this tradition of interventionist liberalism, which we now call neoconservatism, which is dominating the Republican Party. But Walter Lippmann was at the headwaters of all of this. And Edward Bernays was somebody he was very, very acquainted with. And when Walter Lippmann published his book, Public Opinion, in, I believe, the mid-1920s, he was extolling the power of all these techniques of mass manipulation, mass persuasion, and indoctrination that Edward Bernays had pioneered. And you roll back the tape a little bit from that period to World War One. You had a fellow by the name of George Creel, who headed the Department of Public Information, DPI, the Department of Public Information for Woodrow Wilson, and he was using many of these same techniques in order to forge what he called the war will of the American public. And they're all part of the same process, and they all require some kind of a feedback mechanism. You have to make sure that the message is taking, and that's what I was doing when I was working with this clipping agency. I didn't realize it until about 2 or 3 months in that basically the kind of people who had the money to spend on this type of an undertaking were the type of people who had made that money illicitly, either through cartelization of various public goods, or not public goods, forgive me, various parts of the public marketplace. And cartels are created with government collusion. You do not have purely private cartels. You have to have the government chasing away competitors or raising the price of entry into the market through regulation and other means. Or whether you're talking about people using taxpayer money in some form or another to carry out this type of scrutiny of public opinion. And now, of course, you've got many people who are doing the same kind of work, but they're now equipped with more sophisticated technologies. They use search engines, do data mining, and things of that sort. And there's a whole multi-layered apparatus of public opinion manipulation that includes these detailed networks where they judge the feedback. They find out how deeply the public has become committed to the narrative of reality that is being sketched out by the people who are the molders of the public mind. And so you got to believe, as you said a couple of segments ago, Dr. Stan, when the government permits the controlled release of a document like this Department of Homeland Security report, they're rebranding a certain perspective. First of all, they had rebranded after 9/11. A series of political movements and perspectives, as the public enemy, and now they're rolling out a new product, to use a cynical advertising expression. They're rolling out a new enemy, and the new enemy is a domestic enemy composed of constitutionalists and people who believe in limited government.
Well, I really think that, of course, what they want to do down the line is promote chaos and violence and activity here, and I'm sure they have their agents, you know, the agent provocateurs planted within the conservative movement, who either will get other people and talk them into committing acts of violence, or they'll do it themselves and so they can attribute it to the conservatives. We know that during the year of the militia, the militia was primarily funded by the FBI. We know that with the Aryan Brotherhood and these racist groups are out there, robbing banks, they were all working, or many of the people were working for the government. We know in the terrible Christian Identity Movement that Janet Reno listed in her report, one of the major threats to America, the Christian Identity Movement. We know about Elohim City. Almost everybody there that we know of worked for one or another branch of government, In fact, if they'd pulled all the people out, there wouldn't have been anybody there. Even the man who ran this, Reverend Millar, was a FBI informant. So many of these so-called dangerous right-wing movements have actually been created by the government, a controlled opposition on the point of that threat, and that's why we have to have an ever more powerful government to protect us from the militia movement, from the Aryan Brotherhood, from the Christian Identity Movement, all funded with your tax money.
Yes. Now, to enlarge upon that point just a little bit, it's interesting to point out that just, I believe it was this morning, April 17th edition of the Wall Street Journal, there is a headline article entitled Veterans, a Focus of FBI Extremist Probe. One element of this DHS report that was seized upon by a number of people as a particular source of outrage was a section dealing with the possibility that military veterans, who, of course, would have sophisticated training in the use of weapons and also other assets that they could bring to bear, would make themselves very formidable in the event that there were wide-scale civil unrest in this country, that the military veterans of a certain disposition, so-called disgruntled veterans, might pose an internal security threat, might become terrorists. And this piece in the Wall Street Journal today is talking about the fact that there is an ongoing sort of slow-motion purge in the military under the rubric of Operation Vigilant Eagle. They're looking for people who are particularly veterans of the Iraq War who are gravitating toward white supremacist organizations. Now, I bring that up for a couple of reasons, the first of which is the fact that when you get involved in a foreign war that involves inevitably the demonization of the enemy in ethnic terms, the dehumanization of the enemy by referring to them, for instance, as Hajis. The Haji is a term of respect in the Islamic culture. After a certain age, a man is expected to have made a pilgrimage or a Hajj to Mecca. If it's used respectfully as a term of honor, as an honorific, then that's perfectly all right. But it also is used as an epithet to describe anybody of the Muslim faith. And often people are trained to kill, and I don't like to use the expression, but I'll use it by way of illustration, to kill these so-called Hajis by using the term Haji to dehumanize these people. These aren't real people, they're Hajis, so you can kill as many of them as you can. There are plenty of examples of people in every war who have been taught to look upon the enemy basically as something expendable because they're not purely human. We have that mentality being cultivated now in the Iraq War. Many of those people come back and they gravitate toward groups that tend to embrace that as well as other forms of racial bigotry, whether you're talking about anti-black or anti-Latino or anti-Jewish prejudice. Many of these Aryan supremacist, white supremacist organizations are full-service institutions when it comes to your bigotry needs. So they gladly embrace the military combat veterans who come back who have that mindset, who've gone through what I call the Timothy McVeigh finishing school. Mr. McVeigh, of course, was in the first Gulf War, and he came back with a number of attitudes and a number of real problems that were capitalized upon, I believe, by people who led him very carefully into this federal government-controlled network that brought about the April 19th bombing. As a patsy, of course, they needed a figurehead, and there he was. Well, excuse me, the thing that I find really provocative here is that about 12 years ago, I did a piece that wasn't a cover story, but was a feature story for the New American magazine involving a Marine sergeant. I can't remember more specifically what his rank or what his military specialty was, who had become aware of a group within the military called X-Ray. And X-Ray was a group of people being run by military intelligence as a white supremacist slash Aryan supremacist outfit for the purpose of planning and instigating a race war. And it was a self-perpetuating unit. I had written a little bit about some things that had happened in Fort Bragg in late 1995 that had led me into conversations with people in the Special Forces community. I spent some time at Fort Bragg in early 1997, and out of that I ended up getting in touch with this fellow, this Marine, who'd been railroaded into prison because he had been recruited by this group and had rebuffed them. And he said that this is a group that was going to be around for a while. Now, I don't know if that group still exists, if it still exists under that name, but the point I'm making here is that I had tangible evidence, and in addition to a firsthand eyewitness account, of the existence within the military of these groups that are being cultivated for the specific purpose of fomenting exactly the kind of turmoil and upheaval that you just described, Dr. Stan. As we've said before, if it weren't for the very generous help of the FBI and probably other three-letter agencies of the federal government, the white supremacist movement would have died out. It was demographically doomed in the late 1960s. But you had people like George Lincoln Rockwell, who was the head of the American Nazi Party, you know, the flamboyant homosexual who ran the American Nazi Party, who was being run by the FBI. You have other people. You mentioned the Elohim City redoubt there that was involved in the Oklahoma City bombing. You had people like Richard Millar and, Strassmeyer, right, who was being run by at least two agencies in two different countries. And
Carol Howe, of course.
Yeah, Carol Howe was the informant for the ATF. And then this Mahan guy, whose name I can't quite remember. He's a real piece of work, by the way. I heard a couple of voicemail messages he left on the answering machine of my friend Bill Jasper, who did some terrific investigative work on the Oklahoma City bombing.
That was Dennis Mahan.
Dennis Mahan, thank you. but this guy was talking about how in a voice that was positively demonic, was making these vulgar sexual remarks about Jesus Christ and about Christians in general, and making death threats against Bill and anybody he was associated with. Well, Mr. Mahan was on the payroll of the federal government as well. These people are all associated with this hole in the wall called Elohim City. They have this little commune down there, and good grief, you couldn't throw a Nazi stiff arm salute at Elohim City without your palm of your hand smacking the forehead of another federal informant. They were the people who were involved in gestating this plot that brought down the Murrah Federal Building on April 19th, and I don't doubt for a second that there are similar knots and cadres and camarillas of federally controlled bigoted groups out there just waiting to be activated. And so when you see this sort of thing in the Wall Street Journal about the fact that the federal government and the military itself, the Pentagon itself, is starting to scrutinize the ranks of people coming back from the Iraq War who joined these white supremacist groups, and those white supremacist groups are being kept alive by federal funding, you know that things are going to get really bad really quickly. And the only reason these groups are kept alive once again is so that they can give a really unsavory aftertaste, a really unsavory flavor to any of these groups associated with them in official propaganda. And that's what's happened during this last week. The narrative in the so-called mainstream press and in the left element of the blogosphere, the partisan left-wing element of the blogosphere, has been that the people who are going out to these Tea Party protests on tax day a couple of days ago are the large end of a funnel that gathers in a whole lot of discontent, and at the other end of the funnel pops somebody like Timothy McVeigh. That's the exact image, the metaphor used by a lot of these left-wing groups. They say basically you're part of the same process, that if you have sentiments that are considered to be anti-government, that are excessively reverent toward the Constitution, then basically the question is not if you should be regarded as a terrorist, but rather what kind of terrorist you should be classified as.
Well, you know, it's very interesting. There was a man named Jim Keith. He wrote a book called OK Bomb. It was the story of Timothy McVeigh.
Yeah.
And, of course, it basically talked there about the letter that Timothy McVeigh wrote to his sister Jennifer saying that Timothy was part of a government's operation, Secret Service, or Special Service Force, involved in illegal activity. And shortly thereafter, Jim Keith died a very strange death. And that he was a very young person with a very minor surgery. And then, of course, very shortly thereafter, his publisher died. And then very shortly thereafter, his wife died. All possibly coincidence. Timothy McVeigh told his soulmate, there's a book called A Secret Worth Dying For. It was part of a government operation. He told Terry Nichols the same thing, but you're not going to read that in the New York Times. We'll go right ahead, William. We've got 3 minutes for you to wrap up the program.
Yeah, anything you need to know that's of any use, you're not going to read the New York Times unless you know where to look and why it's kept there. A lot of the important truth that we're dealing with is hidden in plain sight, but it's scattered in ways that tend to camouflage the true importance of the information involved. A lot of what's going on right now with respect to the effort on the part of the people running our government to demonize, eventually to isolate, and if necessary, exterminate people they consider to be intransigent, refractory, obstinate, patriotic types. A lot of that information can be obtained if you know where to look and what priorities you should have in looking for it. But the thing is, most people are unwilling to pay just a little bit more attention than normal to what's going on that's really important. We live in a land where distractions abound and dissipations tempt on every side, and most people are too busy enjoying what we have now to think about our responsibility, our moral responsibility, really, to provide for a better life for our children. Now, of course, I'm the father of 6 children. You probably have heard some of them in the background. At least one of them has been very vocal for the last 25 minutes. That's little two-month-old Justice. I'm constantly reminded because of work out of my home about my responsibility to try to make life a little bit better for my kids, try to insulate them from a lot of the influences I've just described while helping them understand what's really important and understand some of the things that are really troubling that are going on. In doing all this, of course, we have to petition for God's help because I know, speaking of myself particularly, I don't have anything like the wisdom necessary in order to do what I just described without making more mistakes than are acceptable on any given day. But it is certainly worth doing. If we do any of these things that are worthwhile in terms of preserving freedom, we're going to make enemies. We're going to end up on lists. That's part of the price we're going to have to pay, but it's worth paying because there is really nothing better among all the temporal gifts we're given, with the exception, of course, of the families we're blessed with, than the blessing of individual liberty itself.
Well said. I certainly concur with that. And I think our job is just to try to reach the people, and with God's help, we'll reach those we're supposed to. And I appreciate so much your being with us here on Friday evening, William, and look forward to talking to you again next week.
Thanks so much. God bless, Dr. Stan.
Good night. God bless. Okay. Well, of course, hope you enjoy our interviews with William Grigg every Friday evening, and certainly a great source of information. You really must understand nothing as it appears to be. We've never been told the truth about what really happened with the destruction of the Murrah building. And the government just still won't release the videos that were taken that day because there's an ongoing investigation. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here, and we do hope you enjoyed our interview with William Grigg, and you can tune in every Friday evening and hear William as he expounds on various subjects. Always a source of pleasure for me. I hope it is for you as well. Well, this is the time when I need to remind our listeners all across America that Radio Liberty is primarily listener-supported, and if you'd like to join the Radio Liberty family of supporters and hear our program, well, we hope that many of you will give serious consideration to joining the Radio Liberty family of supporters. And so you can do that simply by calling us at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. And if you'd like to take the newsletter or you'd like to go ahead and join the Tape of the Month Club, whatever you'd like to do, we'd appreciate hearing from you. If you'd like to donate to our program, why, you can go to our website at radioliberty.com, and there's a donate button there. I objected to it for a number of years. I finally decided we really had to do that to accomplish what we wanted, and it's worked out very, very well, and we appreciate people's generosity. Now, if you have not yet, of course, read my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, you need to get it, and you need to read it. You need to hear my talk on the Forbidden Secret, and the syllabus goes with that. There's another talk there. It's called the Secret Knowledge, but it takes up pretty much the same subject. Then, of course, we carry the DVDs, The Secret Mysteries of America's Beginning, Riddles in Stone, and The Eye of the Phoenix. Those are three separate DVDs, but they are very informative about the spiritual forces, the secret societies working behind the scenes in America. Very well documented, and they're all available by calling 1-800-544-8927. We're carrying Alex Jones' great new DVD, The Obama Deception. We're also carrying his DVDs on Endgame, which goes into the Bilderbergers, The Secrets of the Bohemian Grove, Terror Storm, and we probably have several others there that you'll find if you go to our website, or if you call our 800 number, 1-800-544-8927. We've got a great new four-CD set. It's called Deadly Assassins, and you'll actually hear several assassins talking about their assignments. You'll actually hear my interview with Roger Wilcox, who had done the research on the book Target Patton, because, of course, they wanted to kill Patton. Why? Because they cut his gasoline off so that he couldn't move his armored division across Europe and end the war. They didn't want to end the war. They wanted to prolong the war. They wanted as much death and suffering, and the longer the war went on, the more useless carnage there were. You had to get to Berlin, and they weren't about to let General Patton get to Berlin. That's why they ordered him killed. The book Target Patton, and then, of course, the 4-CD set, Deadly Assassins, unique from Radio Liberty. I think one of our most unique tape sets we have is, of course, the background of the USS Liberty, the intelligence ship that was sent off the Sinai during the 67 war, with the idea that it would be sunk and everybody on board would die, and then they could justify an attack on Egypt. And, of course, the sailors on board, when the ship survived, when God intervened and the ship survived, the sailors were threatened that they would be either sent to Leavenworth or they would be killed if they ever dared to reveal what happened. And for 20 or 30 years, most of the people who survived that day, that terrible, bloody carnage planned in Washington, D.C. for that day, the men kept silent, and then one by one they came forward, and you'll hear interviews with at least three of them there, and of course you'll certainly want to get the DVD and the video that we have. They're separate. One's Dead in the Water, the other is the USS Liberty or Loss of Liberty, or you can get the radio, the Liberty Special. We suggest you get the information. You have our permission to copy what we produce, not this DVD or the video, but our 4-tape set. Get the information out. Let people understand that they sent those men there to die. And just as I believe the people were left in the World Trade Center to die, and the people were left in the Murrah Building to die, there really is organized evil in the world. And so remember our number, 1-800-544-8927. And then please pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and protection until Monday. May the Lord be with you. Thank you.